This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by ProPax with NT-Factor, a complete vitamin and mineral formula. NT-Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause, whether it be age, illness, or just being run down. NT-Factor repairs damaged cells, restores healthy bacteria in your digestive tract. Clinical trials have shown NT-Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it even reverses some symptoms of aging. I've been taking NT-Factor for years, and now the 45-day money-back guarantee, you have nothing to lose. To order, call 800-982-9158, that's 800-982-9158, or go to ntfactor.com, that's ntfactor.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and I'm sharing with you the inspirational story of Sue Reynolds. She's our guest today. She's an ambassador for USA Triathlon, which is the governing body for triathlon in the USA. And Sue, over the past 4 years, has lost 200 pounds. She was north of 300 pounds at 335 at the age of 60, began exercising, started to watch her diet, started competing in triathlons, and in 2016 qualified for the World Triathlon Championship, where she finished 11th in the world, and she's gone on to achieve even greater milestones. An incredible story of self-transformation, a real inspiration for us all. So, Sue, tell us a little bit about what happened after your first triathlon. You kind of caught the triathlon bug, right?
Yes. When I finished my first one, I knew I wanted to come back and do another one. And in the beginning, it was just about, you know, can I make it over the finish line? I do sprint triathlons, which is about a half a mile swim, and then about a 12-mile bike, and then a 3-mile or 5K run. So in the start, it was just, you know, can I make it across the finish line? It took me about 2 hours to do those. And then I started kind of transitioning into being a recreational triathlete, and my goal was to see if I could do a personal best. So could I beat 2 hours? Could I beat an hour and 50 minutes? And it was really just kind of competing with myself. Mm-hmm. And then I transitioned from kind of a recreational triathlete to a competitive triathlete, which was a shock to me. I was swimming in a triathlon trying to beat myself. And as I looked up at the buoy that we had to swim around, there was a woman on my right that was going for the same buoy. And I wanted to beat her to the buoy to get position around the buoy.
And by the way, these are open water swims often, right?
Yes.
In a lake, in your case, here in the Midwest. Here it's in the ocean, usually in the calmer waters of a bay or sometimes a river. Like even the Hudson River in New York, the New York City Triathlon is, you go actually right down the Hudson River, which, I don't know, you probably need some tetanus shots for. So you were going around the buoy, yeah.
Yeah, so and as I was racing towards this buoy against this woman, my right arm came down on her left shoulder, and I thought,
which is part of the race. I mean, I liken it to a school of piranhas, you know,
yes,
just thrashing in the water, because there's so many people in the water simultaneously that it's impossible not to swim over someone or get someone to swim over you or kick someone in the face or get kicked in the face. You know, it's
yes,
part of it.
Yes. But for me, I'm kind of soft-spoken in real life. And normally what I would do if my arm came down on someone, I would say, oh, excuse me, and I'd back away.
Mortified. Yeah, right.
Yeah. So and instead, I just continued my stroke as I raced her towards the buoy, and I ended up shoving her underwater, and which is, like you're saying, part of triathlon. Everybody's just racing towards that buoy.
Well, you were channeling your inner barracuda there, right?
That's right. So, and then I felt so horrible. I felt, oh my gosh, there's this beast within me. But what I was discovering is that there was a competitive side in mm-hmm. me, and I really yep. did enjoy greatly competing. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how that got born. And And then I just decided that I wanted to be among the best, and I started training very, very seriously. It wasn't recreational anymore. It was, you know, I wanted to do the best that I could be in every single aspect of the sport. And so my theme became no stone unturned. If there was something I could think to do better, be it, you know, in swim or run or technique or fitness or my equipment or, you know, just whatever, I made sure that that happened. So the first year I made huge gains. And like you, as you said, qualified for Worlds, and that was an amazing opportunity to go and wear a red, white, and blue uniform that said USA in my name across the chest, and and to be able to compete on behalf of your country. And you know, it was just it was terrifying, but it was just thrilling at the same time.
And by the way, one of the ways that I think they democratize triathlons is by through age group. So age group involves, you know, I think sometimes they have a teenage group, but mostly it starts at, you know, 20 to 24, then it's 25 to 29, and then 30 to 34. And so, you know, naturally, some of these younger athletes are going to do it in, I mean, I got to tell you this, when I do one, there's the winner is doing it in half the time that I'm doing it in. But when I compare myself to my age matched peers, you know, at 65, I'm up there, you know, I'm up there, you know, among the top 10 or top five in some cases, and I won one. So that's what enables people, I think, to continue to do it and really make it virtually a lifelong pastime.
Yes, and it's amazing to me to watch. You know, there's people that are competing at 80 years old, and that's just amazing. So, yeah,
well, I aspire to that, and probably you do too. You know, so what's your training regimen like now? What does it take to go to international competitions and perform as well as you do?
Well, I'm training, I dedicate 4 hours a day to training, probably an hour and a half to 2.5 hours of that is actual work time. The rest is getting all my gear ready and then stretching before and after. And so, you know, it's quite a time commitment.
Especially in winter. I sometimes say that, you know, that I had a great workout this morning. On my bike, it took me like 45 minutes to pull on my gear, and then I rode for an hour.
You know, because, right, exactly.
Because you got to really bundle up, especially when you're in, what, Bloomington, Indiana.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and a lot of times in the winter, I'm in the basement on a bike trainer riding because, you know, we've got snow on the ground. So, so it's just a lot of hours to training. We, you know, work throughout the year to build a base level of fitness so that when I'm getting close to my big races, what we call them, my A races, I can really build and push my body hard because I've built a good base throughout the rest of the year. And then we're working on technique. Right, you know, last year we worked on swim technique a lot. This year we're working on run
technique.
Because
you can always improve. As much as you can swim, there's always a way you can optimize your stroke or your form to gain some advantage.
Yes, yes. And then I always am looking for what I call free speed. It's, you know, where are there little things that I can do that would gain 6 seconds? Because I figure if I could find 10 of those places, that would be a whole minute that I would shave off of my final time.
Well, that's in the transitions too, because it probably isn't a good idea to have a sandwich or brush your hair during the
Yeah, I don't do that any longer.
Right. So you're one of these people who like rushes into the transition zone. You know, starting with the swim, you'll run up this ramp and then you run onto your bike, and in a wet bathing suit, you just, you know, slip into your shoes and off you go. And it's, you want to minimize that time. It could be a minute or less.
Yes. Yes. And some of it, like my, like my shoes, my bike shoes are already on my bike. They're yes. clipped into my pedals already.
Now, that is an art in itself. That requires real balance and skill. I mean, you got to practice that move a lot.
Yeah, yes. And that's part of the training, too, is practicing transition. You know, how do you you know, when you're coming out of the swim, mm-hmm. I'm putting on my bike helmet at the same time as I'm doing something else. So I'm doing mm-hmm. two things at once. And mm-hmm. and then jumping on my bike in my bare feet and putting my shoes on as the bike's already rolling. So, yeah, so there's all those little places, you know, that you can get a few minutes. And then part of it, too, is, you know, saving my pennies and purchasing some of the best equipment as mm-hmm. well so that I can shave off a few seconds there. So you
probably started out with kind of a beater bike, right?
I did.
I got an old, I don't know if you remember, those white Peugeot bicycles that were steel bicycles. That was the one in 1991, I did my first triathlon at the age of 38. And I had a beater bike, and I was wearing a Speedo bathing suit. I had clip-in. I didn't have those. I actually had those basket pedals.
Uh-huh, right.
You know,
right.
And now that, you know, I've got the tri bike and I've got the road bike, and yeah, you know, it's a little bit of an investment, but
but and I think for a beginner, you know, that equipment's not necessary.
No.
I like to tell people it's perfectly okay to do the swim in your regular bathing suit, mm-hmm. borrow the neighbor's, you know, the fifth grade year old who lives the fifth grade student that lives next to you, borrow their bike.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't need a lot of expensive equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So, but when you're, you know, you get to the kind of the competitive end and you're wanting to take off, like there were just, you know, maybe 30 seconds between me and the podium at Worlds. And so every second makes a difference at that level. So you really want to invest in your equipment as well. So, yeah.
How about coaching? Did you get any specific training in technique from an inspirational coach?
Yeah, I have a wonderful coach. His name is Brant Baylor. He's with a company that he started, or a group that he started, called DreamBigTriathlon.com. And he is absolutely wonderful. When the first time I called him, I wasn't sure if he'd be interested in a 6-year-old woman who was overweight, you know, and wanted to do triathlon.
Mm-hmm.
But he's really kind of an interesting person. He has coached several people to Worlds. He's coached people who have qualified for Kona, which is the Ironman World Championship.
Mm-hmm.
But he also specializes in people that are on journeys.
Mm-hmm.
So he has coached people like me that have weight to lose. He's coached an organ transplant mm-hmm. survivor. I mean, he's just amazing. So, but I originally went to him because I didn't know what to do in transition, and I needed some advice, and
mm-hmm.
somehow I ended
with
up
the technical
signing.
Points, yeah.
Yes, yes. And, you know, I needed someone to tell me not to brush my hair. So, but he's just been wonderful. So he, you know, and I also had to learn to be very coachable. And what that meant was not second guessing what mm-hmm. he told me to do.
Being receptive.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'd like to think of it as a partnership. He's the brains behind our organization. He plans our partnership. He plans what I do. He tells me what to do. And then it's my job to execute his training plan exactly like he said.
Mm-hmm.
And then to give him really good feedback on how it felt and how it went. And then every day he looks at all of my data. From whatever the workout was, and then he looks at my narrative on the workout, and then he provides.
So you keep good records of precisely what you do. You have a training log or diary, and some of these can be done electronically, and some of them are manual.
Right, exactly, and so when you're training or racing, there are computers that you wear on your wrist or mm-hmm. on your bike that are picking up your heart rate and your cadence and
mm-hmm.
How much power is coming out of both of your feet. And now I use Power 2 on the run, which is really amazing. But yeah, so Brant looks at all that stuff every night, and
mm-hmm.
he adjusts my plan for the next day based on the data in my report from that night.
Well, that's great, because there is such a thing, and you know, I probably succumbed to this quite a lot is the so-called junk workout. You know, you kind of do what you do, and it's kind of, you know, it's comfortable, and you just bang it out, and, but you're not making any progress. And and believe me, it's hard to make progress when you're in your 60s. It's more of a matter of preventing regression. you know, clearly you've made progress towards better times and better performance. So kudos to your coach for that, you know, the guidance and the feedback, because, you know, each workout should be studied. You know, what were the good points? What were the negative points? What about the nutrition? Do you tank up on food before a workout? Do you take, you know, some sort of sweetened beverage in a bottle, or just use electrolytes? How does that work?
So in my nutrition plan now, once I stopped losing weight, then, and that was really difficult for me, because when I stopped, when I got to the point where I no longer wanted to lose weight, every time I'd ever stopped a diet before, I gained it all back. Yeah. And so it was very difficult to stop. And I was really afraid. And I also, I had been somebody that was overweight all my life. Mm-hmm. And even now, it's hard to think of myself sometimes as someone who's not overweight. And back then, in that transition, at that point in time, I was kind of lost. I didn't know who I was until I finally figured out I'm an athlete.
Well, you almost develop a fixation on losing weight. So at a certain point, you have to kind of say, okay, you know, we've reached the goal, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then can I sustain, or am I just going to start eating again? Mm-hmm. So now my nutrition plan now, I like to think that I'm still on a diet. I'm just on a sports performance diet rather than a weight loss diet.
Yeah.
So all of my food
that's
is still
that's
very.
That's a better way to think about it. Is that it's more when I tell people, you know, I hate the word diet because it's all about the scale, and I'm saying. You know, you want to eat to optimize your performance and health.
Right.
And if you orient towards that, there's less likelihood that you're going to be susceptible to yo-yo dieting because, frankly, people are ambivalent about their weight. At some point, they just said, the hell with it. You know, I've been trying all my life to lose weight. I don't seem to be making any progress. I'm starving. The hell with it. The ambivalence takes over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was me. So, but now, so I'm following this sports performance nutrition plan, and it's basically the same kind of thing as my weight loss plan. It's still whole foods, but we're just increasing, the amount of food. And, specifically, I increased my carb intake.
Mm-hmm. So, because those long sustained workouts, I mean, I think you do require some carbohydrate nutrition.
Right. So, and every day it's a little bit different depending on my workout. So if I have a really intense long workout, my nutrition plan is a little bit, includes a little bit more food. Mm-hmm. Where if it's a lighter workout or a recovery day, then I'm eating less.
What's interesting is you're not eating like a dieting person. You're eating like a Tour de France competitor. You're really eating for performance and not so much about, I got to lose weight.
Yeah. And I think that's really, but even before I started eating for performance, I think that was the big difference that made this diet when I was losing weight successful. When other times I wasn't successful it wasn't a diet. It was a nutrition plan that I was going to do the rest of my life. That really was a huge difference in the way of that I thought about what I was eating. But now it is very much about fueling my body and making sure that, you know, I'm recovered and I have the fuel that I need to, you know, to really get the best workout that I can get and so that my body adapts the way that my coach wants it to.
And you can feel, you know, from the success of the workout if you're eating right, because it really, there is a relationship. So how do you cope with the fact that you've morphed into a completely different person? I mean, what happens when you look at yourself in the mirror? I mean, it's got to be jarring at times. and sometimes people who lose enormous amounts of weight, it's actually psychologically challenging for them to not think of themselves as, you know, an overweight person.
Yeah, yeah. On the day that I stepped on the scale where I was no longer overweight, I was no longer obese, I was still overweight, I can remember literally looking in the mirror and thinking, who is that person? It's not me anymore. You know, I've always been overweight, now I'm not obese anymore. And yeah, that was really, really hard. But then I guess what I really needed was a new identity. And the identity, I mean, this was something that my coach was really helpful with. And I had a hard time thinking of myself as an athlete. I would talk about myself as a pseudo athlete or an athlete wannabe. And he kept saying, Sue, you're an athlete. You're an athlete. You need to think of yourself that way. Mm-hmm. And I think that became my new identity, is that, you know, I'm an athlete. I train. I have a coach. I compete. You know, that makes me an athlete.
And it gives your efforts focus and purpose, which I think is really an important element of this for motivation and consistency. So a technical question here, is there, I mean, you lose that amount of weight. Did you have to have cosmetic surgery, plastic surgery for excess skin?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that question. It's a question I'm often surprised at how many people ask me that question, and it's a question that I'm eager to answer. A lot of people have told me that they don't want to lose weight because they're afraid of having excess skin. Mm-hmm. And
Faces fall, you know, so to speak. I mean, all that subcutaneous fat kind of plumps them up and makes them look a little bit younger, frankly.
Uh-huh. Right. So here's my take on it. One is that when on your face, if you're smiling, people don't see that your face is fallen. So if you just smile all the time, you're in good shape. And then the other part was that at least for me, and maybe you can add something to this, but I had been told, and I found this in myself to be true, that if you lose your weight very slowly, mm-hmm. that gives your body a time to take care of some of that excess skin. Mm-hmm. So I don't have as much excess skin as other people do, I don't think. And then the other part is just, you know, mindset. You know, when I look at my arm, I have a choice. I can look at the bottom part of my arm and see a little bit of excess skin hanging down, or I can look at the top of my arm and see that muscle bulging up. So I just choose to look at the muscle, you know, that's bulging up. So, but, you know, I would much rather have the excess skin and be where I am now, mm-hmm. than to have my body, you know, be blossomed out so that excess skin didn't show as much. So.
Now, to be the devil's advocate here, some people may react to this interview by saying, well, now we've got a person who's absolutely obsessed with exercise and there's no room for any other element of life. You know, do you ever feel depressed or anxious because you can't squeeze in a workout? Does it become a sort of a grim, all-encompassing focus of your life?
Yeah, it is a big part of my life because I love it. I love exercising. I love the triathlon community. The triathlon community is just so full of kind and compassionate and happy people, and I just love being around those folks. And I feel totally blessed that I discovered triathlon, and I'm doing it because I love it. But on the other hand, I'm always quick to point out that you don't have to do it, you know, in a competitive way. There are a lot of people that maybe do one triathlon a year. It's recreational for them. You know, they're not training like I do. And it's just, I think triathlon is such a great way to give focus to your training. And it's a good way to cross train too, because you're not doing like the same
exactly.
thing day after day after day.
One of the reasons
day.
I adopted it, because I used to be just a runner, you know, single-minded runner, and found that I could get the conditioning. And frankly, at 60, I don't know if you find this the case, but at 65, I can't run every day. I can't put in the kind of mileage that I did, because the recoveries are slower and injuries mm-hmm. start to develop if you put in so much mileage. But I get my other alternative aerobic exercises without the high impact, you know, on the bike or in the pool.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And the other thing I think that my coach has me do because of my age is that instead of like one or two long runs a week. We do little short runs often. So I get the same mileage in, but I'm just not running, you know,
running
it all at once. Yeah.
And I was going to mention this, you know, because just forget the weight situation, but just at doing this kind of work in your 60s, are you constantly battling injuries, little things coming up, you know, foot soreness, plantar fasciitis, knee pain, you know, any number of things can trip you up on the path to victory in triathlon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm knock on wood. I have not had a lot of injuries. I had a little bit of a joint issue with my SI joint right before Worlds last year when I was in the build phase and or the peak phase and, you know, really pushing my body hard. But, you know, other than that, I really have been injury free. And I think that my coach takes a lot of pride in making sure that his athletes don't get injured.
So it's a balanced training program.
Yes.
And one element is, yeah, you train hard, but, you know, once you're injured, then you start to lose ground. So I think injury avoidance is an important issue in young athletes, but especially in masters athletes like yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so it's I just think triathlon is a sport for everyone. You know, you can get out and do it slow, dog paddle the swim, walk the run, or you can go the other extreme and you know, do it very competitively or do it somewhere in the middle and race against yourself. It's just a wonderful, wonderful sport.
And more information for people who want to get involved with this. First of all, information about you and your story.
So, you can reach me at Reynolds200 at gmail.com.
So, also, you're on Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram at Sue.Reynolds, and I'm on Facebook at Sue Reynolds. Yeah, so you can reach me that way. You could reach my coach, if that's interesting at all to you, at dreambigtriathlon.com.
Dreambigtriathlon.com.
Okay. And because he works with athletes all over the world, so it's, you know, through the internet you can send data and send reports, and he coaches athletes everywhere. And then what I would really recommend is USA Triathlon is a big push right now to engage beginners in triathlon. And they've put up a really great website called MyTimeToTry.com. MyTimeToTry.com. And there's all kinds of resources there for beginners. There's access to training plans. There's, you know, tips, and it's just a great website. So I'd really recommend that website. And if you're just curious, if people are just curious to go there for more information.
Well, excellent. You've done precisely what I've wanted you to do, which is to provide a source of inspiration to my audience, my Intelligent Medicine listeners, and you know, congratulations on your really, really exciting path, and happy trails going forward in your quest for excellence.
Thank you so much. It's been a delight, and I encourage all of your listeners to try a try.
All right, try a try. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. As you know, this is a vital time to bolster our immune defenses. I've received countless requests for a specific list of supplements that I recommend to support immune health. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Immune Support Protocol, my supplement recommendations offering the greatest boost for your immune system when it's needed most. Best medicine is preventive medicine. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com for more information. drhoffmanstore.com. In addition to the immune support protocol, you'll find easy-to-follow links for our supplement starter kit, heart health protocol, and much more. These protocols are an easy way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need to help you follow the intelligent medicine lifestyle. The same supplements I take for myself and prescribe for my patients. And for a limited time, you'll get free priority shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com.